This is number 0045, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0045. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Daniel Morgan Jones, the CEO and founder of the Church of Jediism. That's right, the Church of Jediism. Is George Lucas aware this group exists?
Yeah, I mean, we've done Time Magazine, and I've been on television all over the world, and I've done, every single radio station there possibly is in Britain. Yeah, I suppose, unless he's hiding under a rock, then he may not have heard of us. But it depends entirely on how much he wants to know. I mean, I don't know if he is looking at us, in case he wants to put a lawsuit out there, but so far we've got no copyright infringement issues yet. But, I mean, he's never contacted us on. Nobody from the George Lucas Society has kind of emailed us or anything.
Stuart Nullman is along with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and on this edition of Book Banter, I review the book of Awesome and take a look back at some classic feel-good books. Coming up next on the Stuff File program.
Gordon Javna of Uncle John's Bathroom Readers fame has a new book out, and that new book is dedicated to Canada. Just who is their market for this book?
Primary target is Canadians. I'm hopeful that people from other countries, including the United States, will have an interest in this. I'm sure they will, because this is not just, local history or local trivia. This is stuff that's really interesting.
Plus, we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0045, is Agya Akhal Singh Khalsa, numerologist to the stars, also known as Yogi Akhal. In addition to being a numerologist, he's an author, speaker, media personality, and counselor to the stars. His corporate seminars are among the most popular today, and for more information, you can contact him via email at yogiakhal, that's Y-O-G-I-A-K-A-L, that's yogiakhal at gmail.com. You can also check out his website at yogiakhal.com. Thank you very much, Mr. Khalsa, for doing the slate on this edition of The Stuff File. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? We seem to be living in a world where people just can't get along. We start off with Waterville, Washington, as the place where this story takes place. An argument over butter in a macaroni and cheese recipe turned into violence between a brother and sister. A 21-year-old man called police June the 6th to say his 17-year-old sister tried to cut his neck with the serrated edge of a spatula. The police report said the sister was making macaroni and cheese when her brother asked if she was using butter. That led to an argument over the difference between butter and margarine. Really? And then the butter battle escalated. The girl was charged in Douglas County Superior Court with fourth-degree assault. People just can't get along. Got another story of somebody who can't get along. In Vernon, Connecticut, Connecticut authorities say a 54-year-old man and his girlfriend were arrested after a dispute over a noisy video game erupted into a Father's Day struggle with police officers. Vernon police say the man, George Stein, was playing video games when a child, annoyed by the noise, shut the door to the room Stein was in. Police said Stein got angry and grabbed some kind of weapon, which led his girlfriend's son to call police. Authorities said the girlfriend, 42-year-old April DeVoe, became combative with officers, refused to let go of a front porch post, and spat in an officer's face. DeVoe was charged with assault on police and other crimes, while Stein was charged with threatening. Both have posted bail. What a happy Father's Day moment, huh? Just lovely. Good times. Good times. Still, with people who can't seem to get along, we go to Illinois. Tracy Durham remembers hearing a pop, but the gunshot wound that the Illinois man discovered after a neighbor asked about his limp? not so sure about. That was a surprise. The 48-year-old Durham told police he thinks he was shot by a friend during a party late Sunday at his home. Police say Durham recalled calling the friend's girlfriend ugly. The Peoria man then heard a pop as he took a drink from a bottle of whiskey. So yes, you could say alcohol was involved. But police said he felt no pain. Well, alcohol was involved. Durham told officers he went to sleep around 3 a.m. and discovered the wound about 4 hours later. Police questioned Durham while he was being treated at a local hospital. He declined to identify the man he suspects shot him. People just can't get along. Let's go to Australia for our next story, shall we? An Australian man was jailed for 30 days for blowing a bubble in court. Mirza Zukanovic, age 20, was up on an assault-related charge when he blew his gum into a bubble and popped it as he looked at Magistrate Rodney Crisp. Instead of demanding an apology or fine, an incensed Crisp issued a jail term and sent Zukanovic down to the cells for scandalizing the court and challenging its authority. He was later freed by Melbourne Supreme Court pending an appeal against the sentence, which, of course, his lawyer described as too harsh. Hey, at least he wasn't caught spitting out gum in Singapore. If he's concerned about harsh, try that. Okay, it's been a while since you had an issue or a story from the Darwin file. And as you know, in the Darwin file, the tree of life is often self-pruning. Hey, kite enthusiasts! Kites are cheap. It's okay to let them go. In DePoe Bay, Oregon, 45-year-old Dennis Keith Brockes would have done well to heed that advice. He had been flying kites with his roommate when his kite got away from him. He chased the kite right off a cliff and fell into the ocean below, and it killed him. His body was found about 50 to 100 yards from shore. The kite, by the way, was never found. Now that's what you call a Wile E. Coyote moment. And going back to Australia for our next story, two Australian men needed surgery after shooting each other in the buttocks during a drinking session to see if it would hurt. Yes, you've noticed. Once again, alcohol is involved. The men, both age 34, used an air rifle to fire at each other. 2 days later, both were in hospital to have pellets removed from their buttocks and legs. Said a police spokesperson, it appears, other than a bit of pain, the two men thought they were just fine. 2 days later, both men had been admitted to hospital and required surgery to remove slug pellets from their buttocks and legs. One of the men had been stripped of his firearm license over the incident. You know, that story came dangerously close to being idiot of the day. But then again, alcohol was involved. The idiot of the day comes up later. And finally, in this news section of the Stuff File, with me, Peter Anthony Holder, in Payson, Arizona, police arrested 94-year-old Dale Warren Graham, who was found in a garage that was not his, and basically making love to a vacuum cleaner. The running vacuum cleaner was attached to the front of his pants. Oh, but it gets much worse. Investigators also determined that Graham had contact with young children and inappropriately touched at least two of them. The potential victims' ages range from 8 to 17. The police department is now trying to determine if any other children have had contact with Graham. Dude, you're 94. Is this how you decide to go out? I mean, really? You need some help. Maybe even religion. Pick a religion. Any religion. Actually, that's a segue to our first guest on the program. The Church of Jediism in the UK is now accepting Americans eager to learn the way of the Force. Daniel Morgan Jones is the highest-ranking member of the Church of Jediism, an organization based on the principles of being a Jedi. He joins us now via Skype-to-Skype communication. Hi, Daniel. How are you?
Hello, I'm well. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for joining us. Nice to have you on the program with us. We had you on the old radio show several years ago. We should mention that you're all the way in is it Holyhead, Wales?
Yes, that's right, yeah. All the way up in an Anglesey, the island of Anglesey.
Now, how long has the Church of Jediism been around now?
It's been around for about... we started in 2008, properly. So it's a good couple of years in the running and operating of the actual organization. We're growing every single day, you know.
So you've now decided to expand into the United States. Why now? Why not earlier? Why not later? What is it about the current timing?
I don't know. Everything happens in synchronous, really. I mean, it just kind of falls into place, and we didn't want to not go to the States earlier, and we didn't think, oh, now is the best time. Or what happened is we teamed up with a gentleman called Red Herring from America, who's now on our council, and he joined the church early last year, and since then we've begun making foundations for establishing a Jedi school in America. So we went through the paperwork, and we now have the official the documents and government papers to actually give out diplomas in Jediism, so you can use it towards schooling and whatnot.
Two questions. First of all, how many members are in the church in the UK?
To give an actual
ballpark figure.
Okay, well, probably about, I don't know, maybe 200,000, maybe.
That's quite a bit. Okay, so, and currently, before you open up in the United States, I mean, you have one member you mentioned who is not on your board. How many members are American?
Loads. I mean, we've our American counterpart, there's probably an equal amount, if not more, of our members from America. You know, we're looking at anything from 200,000 to 500,000 people in America.
Have you heard at all from George Lucas?
No, I haven't. I was talking to some production companies who were thinking about making a documentary with me about going over to see George Lucas, maybe film an interview with him. But so far, no luck with a production company that are ready to do that. But we don't even know if he knows we exist. So we've had no contact with him so far.
I think it would be kind of hard. I mean, like I said, this is the second time we've chatted. We spoke about 2 years ago. I would find it hard for him to believe or to not know that you exist. You have received a certain amount of press over the years.
Yeah, I mean, we've done Time magazine, and I've been on television all over the world, and I've done every single radio station there possibly is in Britain, and yeah, I suppose unless he's hiding under a rock, then he may not have heard of us. But it depends. It depends entirely on how much he wants to know. I mean, I don't know if he is looking at us, in case he wants to put a lawsuit out there. But so far, we've got no. No copyright infringement issues yet, but I mean, he's never contacted us. Nobody from the George Lucas Society has kind of emailed us or anything. So
now, your desire to expand into the United States, you're doing this physically, I believe. You're opening up a new Jedi school in Utah. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We want to actually open up a building in Utah. Because that's where our council member from America is. And basically what we're trying to do is we're literally trying to fundraise, because we are a non-profit organization with minimal funds, I mean absolute minimal funds, and so we're trying to organize and fund everything ourselves, which of course isn't really easy when you're only new, starting out. So what we're looking for now is kind of anybody to take on the idea. We were thinking about looking into companies like Apple, who help set up community ventures and help, kit out schools with computers. We were thinking about, somebody along the same lines to help us, set up a school and help fund that.
Now, you are aware of the fact that Utah itself is a very strong religious state with the Mormons.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's quite interesting to say that. Yeah, I mean, the Mormons don't actually like us at all. We did a seminar in Wales, in South Wales, about a year ago, and it was a multi-religious seminar. There was different types of faiths there. And, when the Mormons were speaking, everyone went in and listened to the Mormons and or the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, as they like to be known as. And then when it was our turn, everybody turned up, but then the Mormon gentleman stayed for about 2 minutes and then got up and shook his head and walked out and took his family with him. So I really don't think they approve of what we're doing, you know?
Okay, so basically, for those who aren't familiar with the Church of Jediism, what is it that you are doing? What are the beliefs of the Church of Jediism?
In the Church of Jediism, we believe that the body, there's more to life than what meets the eye. We focus on enhancing your physical potential, your mental potential, and your spiritual potential to its max. So we kind of exploit everything that you do and say and hear and think to its full level. So you become operating on the level which you should have done millions of years ago. Humans were kind of, you know, they operated on a level where they were absolutely at their fullest capacity, but now we're being dumbed down by governments and all kinds of different types of organizations just trying to suppress humanity to its dumbest form. So we kind of enlighten that, if you will. We break you free from the shell. And I think, definitely, I said this on an Australian radio station the other day, I think that what we have to offer may be the most important thing you'll ever read in your entire life, especially human existence. And I think we definitely hit the nail on the head for why it's important to study what we have to offer.
Now, as I'm sure you're aware, there are some people who just won't take this seriously, that quite frankly, any new religious organization that comes along might in some circles be treated as no more than a cult. Do you have problems with people who don't take what you do seriously or don't take seriously your seriousness of it?
Sometimes. I mean, it depends what respect. I mean, if people say to us, you know, what's your religion, we say, well, Jediism, then obviously they're going to have their kind of opinion on it. And that's fine, but I mean, we kind of draw the line where it becomes a bit too PC when, I mean, I was recently thrown out of a grocery store over here in the UK, and that hit international press because I was wearing a hood and I said, you know, it's part of my religion to wear a hood, and they didn't acknowledge it, yet they acknowledged the fact that a Sikh wants to wear their hood or a turban or whatever. So it depends on what degree people don't believe or don't, how can I say, don't respect what you are. I mean, for anybody who's uneducated in Jediism, then they shouldn't really have a comment, if you know what I mean. If you've read it and read the whole thing and found out exactly what it's about and they say, oh, it's rubbish, then that's, you know, that's a fair point. But if you have nothing, if you have no idea what it's about and you still cause damn upon it, then I really think that we will have an issue with those types of people.
Okay, you said you were thrown out of a place for wearing a hood. Describe the hood you were wearing.
We kind of designed a new kind of view for Jedis. Obviously, we can't walk around in big long robes because, I mean, that just isn't practical for an everyday person, and that's part of our belief system, is that anybody, an everyday person, can use this. So I was wearing just a light cotton, like a jacket with a hood on it. It was just like light material, like summer material, and it happened last September, and I just basically had the hood up on it because we it's in our doctrine to keep your hood up in places of large public volume.
So it was just a hood. It wasn't like your face was covered or anything.
No, it was just a hood, and it wasn't even like right down over my face. It was just the back of my head, really.
So the way Obi-Wan Kenobi would look without the robes.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Gotcha. So now that you're expanding the church, first of all, is this a full-time thing for you? Is this your job, or do you is this just your religion, and you have a day job?
I do have a day job. I've just come back from work, actually. I work for McKesson Corporation, which is an American company. But what I do is I'm like basically an IT personnel. But you know, Jediism runs parallel with that. I mean, I work 9 to 5, and then when I get in, I just study all my time, then just writing books, getting literature done, getting new websites set up, getting new policies in place, trying to recruit people, pushing different policies, you know, trying healthy living and all this kind of stuff. So it's kind of like a full-time job outside of my full-time job.
Okay, so now that you are involved and you're expanding this church, I mean, obviously this religion is relatively new, so you weren't raised in the Church of Jediism. How were you raised?
I was raised from a non-biased point of view. Both of my parents were non-religious. They never christened me, or they never christened anybody in my family, none of my brother or my sister. And we were given the choice to choose what we believed in. And our parents were very PC. I mean, they kind of didn't have any. They didn't have any obligation if you wanted to. You know, if I said to them I was a Christian, they'd be like, okay, that's fine. But they never really forced it upon me. But I suppose you could say I was raised in a Christian environment because of the schooling I had. I went to a Christian school, which, you know, I was educated in the Bible and stuff, which wasn't very interesting for me.
By the way, are you making tea or is that a fire alarm going off?
I think it's an alarm going off outside, but I'm not entirely sure. I didn't have my window open.
Okay. You already talked about how the Mormons have felt about your church. What have you heard from other religions? What have you heard from the Catholics or Jews or Muslims?
Muslims probably wouldn't like us because we don't stand for what they stand for. I don't think any religion entertains us, to be honest with you. The reason being is, like we said, we offer a non-biased community where we have Jedi Scientologists, we have Jedi Christians, we have all types of different types of people who can use and adapt the tools of what we offer to enhance their lives and enrich what they believe is reality. And because we do that, we kind of unsuppress their lives, where Christians and other religions like Muslims and stuff, they kind of work to a set of rules which are completely strict and in some cases extreme. And so we very, you know, very stray away from that. So we give it the relaxed feel, so you don't have strict rules to attend to, and you don't have to completely just have, you know, you don't, how can I say it, like the Muslims would have a strict rule, and that's what they think religion is, but we're a bit more relaxed. They see that as being, I don't know, blasphemy, I suppose, and damning in the eyes of God, because if their God is superior, then we mean nothing.
If you could speak to George Lucas, what would you want to tell him?
Well, there's a million and one questions I'd love to ask George Lucas, or say to him, but if I was to speak to George Lucas today, I'd probably say thank you for giving me the spark and the idea to go forward and do something that would, that's helped millions of people, I mean, or thousands of people, not only the films, I mean, giving me the idea to make the church, and it definitely enlightened a lot more people than he'd hit with the films.
One last question. Tell us about what you want to do in the United States, in North America, when it comes to getting the word out about the Church of Jediism.
We're looking for like a TV network or media company to help fund a kind of an on the road kind of documentary that could maybe use as a TV series, but of us setting up lectures, like talks about Jediism all around, like maybe university campuses or something of the sort in America, and we can try and fundraise that way for the church, the school, but also it would give everyone in the world and America the kind of insight to what we actually do, what I'm talking about, and an in-depth feel for exactly what I'm trying to say.
People can find out more information by going to your website, which is www.jedi-church.com. That's www.jedi-church.com. We've been speaking to Daniel Morgan Jones, and you are the highest-ranking member of the Church of Jediism. What exactly is your title?
I'm the CEO and founder of the Church of Jediism.
Okay. I thank you very much, Daniel, for being on the program with us.
Not a problem. I loved it.
Daniel Morgan Jones, the CEO and founder of the Church of Jediism. Again, you can check out their website at jedi-church.com. That's jedi-church.com. You can also go to my website, thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is number 00045, and you'll find links to their site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo, is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well,
I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we will have another edition of Book Banter. Stuart Nullman will be in to review a book or two. Plus, Gordon Javna from Uncle John's Bathroom Readers Institute talking about their latest book, which is all about Canada. And we have an idiot of the day and, of course, lots more stuff, including right here, right now. Now, it was anything but a dog's life for Conchita, a beloved Chihuahua, whose eccentric owner bequeathed her a $3 million trust fund, a move now being contested by the late heiress's only son. The heiress, Gail Posner, left her pooch, which she often decked out in a diamond necklace, a trust fund, and another $27 million to the staff of her Miami Beach mansion so that they can get by rent-free while caring for her pets until they die. In contrast, Posner tossed a bone to her estranged son, Brett Carr, a $1 million inheritance. A Miami court will now decide whether his late mother was manipulated into giving away her cash, as he contends, or if she spent it the way she wanted to. Now, here's a quote from her son. She never would have done that unless she was under extreme influence. Her staff exacerbated her paranoia and tendency to be in a delusional world. Yeah, he just wants the bucks. Although, there's no doubt that the woman was, well, nuts. But let's just move along, shall we? In Batavia, New York, 41-year-old Suzanne Corona is not very good at having affairs. She was caught allegedly having sex on a public park picnic table in broad daylight. The responding police officer actually knew her and knew she was married. When questioned by police, Corona and her 29-year-old gentleman companion, Jason Amend, insisted that they were just talking. But a police spokesman says it was obvious they weren't just talking. So along with a charge of public lewdness, Corona is now charged with adultery because the arresting police officer knew she was married. That makes her only the 13th person in New York State history to actually be charged with adultery. While her lover is also charged with public lewdness, no adultery charges for him because, according to police, he did not know Mrs. Corona was indeed Mrs. Corona. Corona says she plans to fight the constitutionality of the adultery charge and also says that any children in the area could not have possibly seen anything inappropriate. Like, that's not really the point here, is it? But anyway, if convicted, she could face up to 90 days in prison and a $500 fine. Meanwhile, in Fort Worth, Texas, Carla Westbrook Spaniel won't be the principal of Elder Middle School anymore. Not after she allegedly left her own 3- and 4-year-old children alone at the Adolphius Hotel in Dallas while she went to a nightclub. Plus, she allegedly got into a physical altercation with a bouncer at the club and wrestled with a police officer as they tried to arrest her for public intoxication. The Fort Worth School District quite rightly voted to fire her. Kind of makes you wonder how she ever got the job of school principal in the first place. Okay, would you like to hear about another Catholic Church scandal? Okay, here we go. Catholic Youth Organization coach Michael Kuhman, who was 45, was charged in May with various misdemeanors regarding an alleged attempt over a several-month period to fix kids' basketball games for Kuhman's Our Lady of Lourdes Church team in East Pennsboro Township, Pennsylvania. Bet you didn't think we were going there, did you? Yeah. According to police, Kuhman sent multiple text messages to referees Jay and John Leader, offering them as much as $2,500 if certain games reached the, and I'm doing air quotes here, right outcome. The Catholic Diocese of Harrisburg has suspended Kuhman from coaching. By the way, in Kuhman's day job, he is a financial consultant. He ain't getting my money, that's for sure. Okay, let's talk about cultural diversity, shall we? In May, Britain's Norfolk District Council banned the traditional barroom game of dwile flonking. That's Dwile Flonking. Let me spell that for you. D-W-I-L-E. That's one word. Flonking. F-L-O-N-K-I-N-G. Yes, they've banned the traditional barroom game of Dwile Flonking just as the inaugural World Championships were about to take place at the Dog Inn Pub in Ludham, Great Yarmouth. Now, the game, which some believe has been played since medieval times, calls on players to fling a beer-soaked rag from the end of a small stick toward the face of an opponent. So yes, alcohol is involved. And in the event the tosser misses the target two straight times, he must quickly down a half pint of ale. The council called the game a health and safety problem. You figure? Okay. Now that we've got the drinking story out of the way, let's get to the dining story, shall we? Among the unique dining experiences at the Beijing Zoo, and by the way, you never like to hear food and zoo in the same sentence, do you? Yeah, anyway, let me start again. Among the unique dining experiences at the Beijing Zoo is the ability for patrons to view an exhibit of frolicking hippopotamuses and then step into the zoo's restaurant and dine on such dishes as toe of hippopotamus. What? Only the toe? An animal that big and you're only eating the toe? Okay. Also available, kangaroo tail, deer penis. Yeah, that's right. Ant soup and other delectables. Animal welfare activists condemn the dining experience, according to a dispatch in London's Guardian. Kel, surprise. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, police in Ellensburg, Washington say a man looking for a place to sleep broke into the basement of a bank, and yes, he had been drinking. Surveillance video shows the man breaking a basement window at around 3 a.m. Saturday and leaving before 8 a.m. Police tracked down the 21-year-old man by Tuesday and arrested him at his home for investigation of second-degree burglary and mischief, malicious mischief. Captain Dan Hansbury said the man was intoxicated and doesn't know why he went to the bank to snooze. Well, he's behind bars now, so there you go. Yeah, this is the Stuff File.
The Stuff File. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nullman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And once again, we have with us Stuart Nullman and another edition of Book Banter. Hi, Stu.
Hey, Peter. Are you feeling awesome today?
I always feel awesome.
Well, you know, let's define awesome because this is a good bridge into the book I'm going to be reviewing. It's called The Book of Awesome. See, life is full of simple pleasures, and that can make you feel good or turn a bad day into a good one. But what if those simple pleasures were enough to make you exclaim, awesome? Well, Neil Pasricha realizes the potential of these awesome things and has created a blog. It's called 1000awesomethings.com that lists and describes these simple pleasures. And as a result, has garnered over 10 million hits. He has taken some of his favorite awesome things from his blog and compiled them into book form called, obviously, The Book of Awesome. Now, this is quite the feel-good type of book that will easily uncomplicate one's everyday frustrations and realize how simple things were when you were growing up. They range from the obvious, such as the five-second rule, getting served breakfast in bed, and licking the batter off beaters of an electronic mixer, which I've done.
While it was running?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, that's more the book of sadistically awesome.
Okay.
And to the not-so-common, like watching The Price is Right during the Bob Barker era when you were sick in bed, or solving the Wheel of Fortune puzzle before the contestant did, which I got that same feeling when I solved the Final Jeopardy clue.
Yes.
Yes. And feeling great about it. Still do it.
And we should mention that you were on Jeopardy.
20 years ago.
20 years ago.
Yeah. Won some nice prizes, too. Yeah. However, Do you still
have any of that Rice-A-Roni left, the San Francisco treat?
No, but the Hershey's chocolate syrup lives on.
Okay.
However, it doesn't end with just listing these awesome, simple pleasures. Pasricha effectively describes why these pleasures are so regarded with so much affection, which are based on his own experiences, which also shows his rather sharp sense of humor. And he also has a deft way of being somewhat explicitly and graphically descriptive. Case in point. When he writes about putting potato chips in a sandwich, he describes the deli-style sandwich this way, for the potato chips. He calls it, those warm and tired messes look pathetic and sweaty cheese, slimy tomatoes, and warm turkey.
And this is supposed to be enticing?
Yes, yeah, supposed to be awesome, actually.
Okay.
And of course, every entry in the book ends with a very loud and proud, awesome. The Book of Awesome, I found, is a fun book to leaf through and savor. It's an ideal antidote for all those bad days and pitfalls we all go through. And it shows that all of those best things in life and good things that we've experienced in the past can be enough to bring a smile on our face and get that warm, kind of fuzzy feeling all over. Whether it be the smell of fresh cut grass or even purchasing your first iPod like I did recently. All I have to say is, awesome. It's called The Book of Awesome by Neil Pasricha. It's published by Amy Einhorn Books, a division of Putnam, and it's $28.50. And if you like feel-good books,
right,
may I recommend three books? When they first became big franchises, I recommend Chicken Soup for the Soul, Life's Little Instruction Booklet, and Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, It's Only Small Stuff. Read the original books. And those, I mean, I read them, and they did make me feel good, and sometimes make you choke up, and they're well-written stories and little bits of fun advice and hints. So before it really blossomed into the, like, Chicken Soup for Every Kind of Soul,
right,
read the original one, and goes the same thing for the other two books
as well.
Was
that Jack Canfield?
Yes, and Hansen, Victor Hansen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's still going strong after all these years. So those three I recommend. So if you're not feeling good, you need a bit of feel good, read these four books.
Excellent, excellent. So, since we're in the height of the summer,
yeah,
is there any? What are you reading right now?
What am I reading right now?
Yeah.
Oh, let's see. There's so many books actually, but one that I'm looking forward to is a book about Willie Mays, the authorized biography of Willie Mays. You know, just
excellent.
In time for summer. Well, baseball.
Now,
it's here.
I just recently gave you a book, so I hope you get a chance to review it. It only comes out in August, so it's a publisher's copy of it. It's a Mirror Image by Dennis Palumbo.
Oh, I reviewed one of his books previously. Yes.
Yes, from Crime to Crime.
Yeah, it's like 10 minute mysteries for you to solve.
Oh, they were great.
Yeah,
they were great.
Keeps the brain going.
Absolutely.
So that's what I'm reading right now, actually. And if you want to start reading, about reading, you can read my Book Banter column every week in the West End Times. You can read it online at www.westendtimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stuart, for being on the program with us once again.
Well, thank you. And I'm going to go back to the balcony, well, maybe the beach, actually, and read those books that I just mentioned.
Excellent. Stuart Nolman and Book Banter here on The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
You're listening to The Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Terrestrial radio is basically going to be supplanted by what's happening in technology. This new technology, it's remarkable. You're going to see in your automobiles internet receivers instead of radios. Our cell phones are going to become fundamentally our computers.
Download every film ever made in 4 minutes. 3D
is coming. It's amazing. We're going to have a dramatic increase someplace down the road. When you get your internet receiver, that gives you the entire world.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide broadcasting system.
This is the future of radio.
Get to where you want to be in the change in technology.
You're listening to The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder. Facebook users, don't forget to join The Stuff File group.
And still to come, we'll talk to Uncle John himself from the Uncle John Bathroom Readers Institute. That would be Gordon Javna. Plus, we have an idiot of the day and more stuff for you right here, right now. Hey, if you and your friends are going to break into the zoo and take pictures of yourselves with the animals in their habitats, might want to not post those pictures on Facebook. It happened after 6 college-age kids allegedly broke into the Albuquerque Biopark Zoo. The pictures showed them climbing a fence, crawling under a fence, then going into some of the animals' cages and habitats. More pictures showing them with giraffes, sea lions, and even inside the rhinoceros cage. The zoo had no idea that anyone had broken in until an anonymous source came forward and showed the pictures to police and city officials. Police are continuing their investigation and said they want to talk to the people in the pictures. But get this. Detectives said there's no guarantee anyone involved will be charged with a crime. Rather, any charges will depend on intent and what the people did once they were inside the zoo. So apparently the zoo is like Vegas. What happens inside the zoo stays inside the zoo.
And finally, in this section of the Stuff File program, on the news portion of the show with me, Peter Anthony Holder, all three members of a British punk rock band were arrested after they returned to England on suspicion of human trafficking of illegal immigrants. Ben Waldock, Josh Reed, and Ben Dowling, all 18, had just returned from a European tour, and customs officials found four Vietnamese immigrants hiding in their stage speakers. But the band was released after officials decided that their driver, a Czech man, was probably responsible. Oh, by the way, the name of the band? Criminal Mind. How fitting. Anyway, let's get to our next guest on the program, shall we? On the line with us right now is Gordon Javna, better known as Uncle John, the guy behind the Uncle John Bathroom Readers. And they are actually visiting our land here above the 49th parallel in Canada as they have a new book out just in time for July 1st, Canada Day. It's called Uncle John's Bathroom Reader Plunges into Canada. Hi, Gordon. How are you?
I am fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us.
My pleasure. Great to be with you. I want to start off on the wrong foot and correct you slightly. The title of the book is Uncle John's Bathroom Reader Plunges into Canada, eh?
Plunges into Canada, eh? Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha. Now, first of all, I mean, you've had so many books out in the past, and these books are read everywhere. Have you done books that specifically target a region or a community in the past or a country?
We have done some regional titles. We did one for Texas, and we did a couple of others for different states in the U.S. But you know, we were missing the boat a little bit because we have a fairly large following in for the entire series in Canada, and I started thinking about it. I said, well, I guess that I share a lot with Canadians. I share a sense of humor, and I also share this sort of mania for arcane trivia and obscure history. And so I said, boy, that's pretty stupid. So I quickly remedied that and set to work doing some research. And we started off thinking that we would do a book that covered as little of the obvious topics as possible, but and focus more on obscure histories and unknown origins. And we found that we could tell some pretty good stories about Canada that probably everybody in Canada knows, stories like the Halifax explosion, which was the largest man-made explosion in the world to that date, and it still ranks up pretty high. It was in 1917, and a pretty incredible story. And another story would be the story of Gander in Newfoundland, which Gander is a little town with an airstrip. And after 9/11, when U.S. airspace was closed, there were still planes in the air, and they had to land someplace. And that little town took in a bunch of planes and thousands of people for a few days, and it's a really heartwarming story. So, I mean, those are the kind of things you might have seen in the news, but nevertheless, they're good to retell because they have they're just fascinating. But in addition to that, we found lots of excuse me, we found lots of obscure information, including the story of the Macintosh Apple, which is, as opposed to the Apple Macintosh, which is the it is 100% Canadian. It's one of the most popular varieties of Apple in the world, and not only is it 100% Canadian, but every Macintosh Apple is directly related to the first trees. What happened is a farmer was clearing some land in Ontario, and he happened upon a little clump of apple trees, which he transplanted to his house so that he could tend them and nurture them, because he liked the idea of having an orchard. And remember, this goes back to 1811. He did not know enough botany to know how to cross-pollinate and how to cross-pollinate and perpetuate the breed, but they did understand grafting, and so they grafted branches onto other rootstock, and literally every tree that exists today came from that original tree.
Hmm.
And by the way, if you can't guess what the man's name was, it was McIntosh.
Now, with all this information that you've gathered, as you said, there is quite a bit of information that we as Canadians would know. Is your primary target audience for this book Canadians or
sure.
everyone else?
Well, primary target is Canadians. I'm hopeful that people from other countries, including the United States, will have an interest in this. I'm sure they will. Because this is not just local history or local trivia. This is stuff that's really interesting. For instance, Canada is the home of Harlequin romance novels. There was a publisher in Winnipeg who reprinted romance novels from that were originally published in England, and they all took place in the. In the 1800s, a sort of Pride and Prejudice takeoff, and they had a following until an American publisher started horning in on their territory by doing modern romance settings, and that galvanized the editors at Harlequin into doing the same thing, modern settings, modern characters, and so on. And once they took it on, they were unstoppable. They were purchased by Torstar, which owns the Toronto Star, and that company put even more resources behind it. Now they own all of the competitors that there are, but Harlequin remains a powerhouse. And I think they publish like 100 novels a month. That's huge.
I also find it interesting that there are a lot of facts and information that I, as a Canadian, would never have even considered or was aware of. I was not aware of the fact that in British Columbia, it's illegal to kill a Sasquatch.
Yes, it should be illegal everywhere. We need as many Sasquatches as we can.
I'm just glad I found that out before I went out and killed one.
Well, thank God we stopped you. Canadians might not know that the BlackBerry was invented in Windsor. Windsor, Ontario.
Oh yeah, we're fully aware of that because the guy who did it is still trying to buy the Phoenix Coyotes.
Another powerhouse. Let's see what else is in this book. Secret of the Postal Codes. You ever wonder what the postal codes mean?
Good question. I know what mine is, but I don't know the meaning.
Well, you
behind
know
it.
What it is, but do you know how they come about? I mean, obviously it's the first digit, which is always a letter.
Mm-hmm.
Indicates a larger area, and each subsequent digit represents a smaller part of that area. But the letter T, for instance, is Alberta, and the letter S is Saskatchewan. And this brought up something else which we found fascinating, which is certain numbers, because the second digit is always a number, certain numbers look like letters, such as I. 1 looks like an I, and 0 looks like an O. So you can make words out of these things, and the government is careful to avoid any words that might be naughty or distracting, such as in Alberta. I mean, you could have T1M, which is Tim,
mm-hmm.
Look at it quickly, or you could have T1S, which is Tiz, and there's another letter that you cannot put after the one.
Exactly.
Or in Saskatchewan, you can have S-O... Well, can't have S-O-S, and you can't have S-O-B. But they won't do L1E either, because that looks like a lie, and that looks it's distracting. So, I found that fascinating. Anyway.
Yet here in Canada, every Christmas you can send your letter to Santa to
yes,
ho, ho, ho.
H-O-H-O-H.
Yeah.
H-O-H-0-H-O. Yeah, that's right. We source the origin of poutine, the inimitable Canadian fast food.
Which, by the way, has the consistency, if it's done right, of driveway sealer.
Well, For those that don't know, if there is anybody that doesn't know, it's French fries and cheese curds with gravy. The original poutine was done sort of by accident, and it did not have gravy, but it originated in Warwick, Quebec, where a restaurant worker filled a takeout order for French fries and cheese by putting them in the same bag. That was in 1957, and the worker's name was LaChance. So he took a chance and came up with this.
Yeah, it's a book filled with fascinating information, not just for Canadians, but for anyone out there who wants to learn about Canada. And I'm just wondering, did you employ Canadians in gathering this information, or did you just go out there and find this on your own? Because I think there are Canadians out there who would raise an eyebrow to, oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, we're not that arrogant to think that we could, we Americans could come up with a book without consulting Canadians. That would be too much. So, you know, of course, Canadians worked on this book with us. And otherwise, how would we have found interesting stories? Like, did you know that Canadians hold the hockey stick, use a left-handed hockey stick, and Americans use a right-handed hockey stick? And we wanted to find out why. Why is that? Why could that be true? Because turns out that they think that because American kids, the first sport they play is baseball, and baseball bats, you hold them with a right-hand grip. Most people hold them with a right-hand grip, and they just translate that to hockey when they pick up hockey much later. The same is true in Canada. Hockey stick is probably the first implement that kids are given, so you get more control over the stick if you use a left-handed stick with your right hand on the top, which is why there are more left-handed golfers in Canada per capita than there are in the U.S.
Fascinating. Yeah. Absolutely fascinating. The book, and I'm going to get the title of it right now, Uncle John's Bathroom Reader Plunges into Canada, A. There you go. And it's out just in time for Canada Day. And, of course, that's here in Canada, but also available everywhere else. And it's just one of a great long line of books put out by Uncle John's Bathroom Readers. I thank you very, very much, Gordon, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
My pleasure. I'm going to leave you with this little bit of Canadian trivia.
Great.
Do you know who Lorne Lipowitz is?
No, I do not.
Lorne Lipowitz goes by another name, Lorne Michaels.
Ah, yes.
And of course we think Lorne Green. Sent me wondering what's the thing with Lorne? And turns out that Lorne is more common for a man's name in Canada than anywhere else in the world, which is surprising considering it's a Scottish name, but not so surprising when you find out that in the 1870s, Canada had a governor general appointed by Queen Victoria, whose name was John Campbell, and his title was Marquess of Lorne. And that sort of made him a namesake, and those things get passed along through generations. But what we also found that's interesting is that possibly the reason Campbell got the appointment is he was married to Victoria and Albert's fourth daughter, whose name became a namesake for plenty of places in Canada. Her name was Louise Alberta. And Lake Louise is named after her, and of course the province of Alberta is named after her.
Fascinating stuff. Again, the book is called Uncle John's Bathroom Reader Plunges into Canada A. I thank you very much, Gordon, for being with us.
My pleasure. It's great to be with you.
Gordon Javna, better known as Uncle John, the guy behind the Uncle John Bathroom Readers, with their new book, Uncle John's Bathroom Reader Plunges into Canada, eh? You can check out their website at bathroomreader.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com to the What's On page for this show, which is number 0045. And you'll just find the links to their site, plus links to amazon.com and amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And we're almost done with this edition of the show, but first, time for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A pizza delivery man was robbed when he got to an apartment in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, but the delivery man got the upper hand. The robber dropped his gun, and the pizza guy grabbed it and started beating on the robber. Someone jumped out of the bushes to assist the robber, so the foodie ran back to his car, and while the men tried unsuccessfully to stop him. Once he got back to the store, he called police, who went out to the apartment and found two men surrounded by pizzas and the stolen money. Nathaniel J. Seidel, age 21, who was bleeding from his beating, tried to escape on a bicycle but fell over and was caught. Tyler Joseph McLaughlin, age 19, tried to run and he was also caught. They were charged with first-degree robbery. You know, some bad guys return to the scene of the crime. Others just never bother to leave. Why wouldn't they leave? Simple. One reason and one reason only. They're idiots.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, number 0045. The website is thestufffile.com, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's thestufffile.com, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, this is 0045. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can find me at facebook.com. That's facebook.com/PA Holder. And also at Twitter, at twitter.com/PA Holder. Hope to see you back here for our next show, on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, streaming on PCJMedia.com, and over the air on World FM 88.2 in New Zealand, and Gold FM 90.5 in Singapore. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. No animals were harmed in the production of this program, except, of course, the tasty ones. Good night and pass the paprika.